Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Today's reading is from Jeremiah 29, verses 4 to 9. You'll find it on the Red Bible on page 1223. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city in which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Do not let the prophets and diviners among you deceive you. Do not listen to the dreams you encourage them to have. They are prophesying lies to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. This is the word of the Lord.
I want to share with you just a little bit of the work that's going on where I am, but also why this part of Jeremiah is really key to what we do. So I'm working for Shift Youth and Community. We are the UK iteration of an international ministry called Fusion, which started in Australia about 60 years ago. There was another Fusion in the UK that was bigger than us and looked better than us and more people knew. And so we used to go places, oh, you work for Fusion. I know someone who, I'm like, yeah, not that Fusion. And so we changed our name so to Shift Youth and Community. And our heart is to see communities transformed to become more like the kingdom of God. And so our little tagline is shifting culture at the heart of the community. We don't want to change people's culture, but what we want to change is the culture of the community, to become more that one that reflects the kingdom of God. And so we work with local churches, we work with local government bodies, we work with local schools, whoever has a heart to see their community changed. And what we bring are things like, well, wouldn't it be great if our community loved each other, if neighbours cared for each other, if rather than solving things with violence, we solved things with restorative justice. So we saw relationships restored rather than broken. Now, these things we know are all of the kingdom. For churches, Christians, we talk about these are the things of the kingdom that we want to see. We want to see God's love at the heart. We want to see relationships restored. We want to see lives transformed by God. But we can talk about those things with schools as well. As wouldn't it be great that people loved each other? Students loved each other. Wouldn't it be great if we restored relationships rather than continue to see them broken? We're still talking the kingdom of God. We just don't use that last word. But what we see happen is people start to, as these things happen, people start, wow, that's amazing. And then they start asking questions of why do you do what you do? It's not glorious. There's no, you know, huge paycheck. There's no banner. There's none of the things that make it a nice thing. But why do you do what you do? Well, we do what we do because this is what we think God's like. And so with the churches, we're exceedingly, you know, this is who we know God is. This is who Jeremiah was talking about. And he said, work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you. Maybe you feel like you're not in a place that you should be. Maybe you feel like, gee, God, why am I still here? Or why am I in this situation? Why has this happened? And God said, regardless of where you are, seek the peace and the prosperity. Seek the peace. The peace is the shalom, everything as God created it to be. That's what peace means. everything, so how God created things to be. Back in Genesis, we see God created things to work in a particular order. He created things in order. And so he created the world to produce. He created, you know, trees to blossom and fruit. And he produced humans to be in relationship with each other. He produced all of creation to be under his rule. He produced, you know, us to be in relationship with him. All of these things is how it was meant to be. Yet for most of us and for most of our communities, that's not how it is. And so through Jeremiah says, work for the peace. Seek the peace and the prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. This is not a place anyone wanted to be. God picked up his people and he sent them into exile. Okay, it's not when you're back in the land that I give you and the world is fantastic, seek the peace and go. No, no, in exile where you hate it and when you're ruled by a group of people that don't know me, in that place. Seek the peace. In that place, go and prosper. Why? Because its welfare will determine your welfare. I work in a community that wouldn't be deemed as one that you'd want to be sent to. But like every community, when it's doing well, we love being there. You know, when regardless of where you live in kind of the East Doncaster vague area, you know, when things are going well in this community, it's a good place to be. Think about a smaller community. If things on your road, you know, if your road is a nice place to live in where you know your neighbours and everyone looks after each other and kids can play freely, it's a good place to be. It's a nice place to be. You don't want to move from there. Maybe you get new neighbours and they're awful and they play music till 3 a.m. and it's not such a nice place to be. So we want to seek the peace and prosperity of our community because when it prospers, when it does well, we do well. It's a good place to be. And so we say to the churches, so I'm employed 3 hours a week to be the youth worker / senior minister of a church in the community we work, just because we don't have a senior minister at the moment. We say simple things like, don't talk about the community. We're going to go out and do these great things for the community. No, we're going to go out and do things for our community because this is where I live. It's not us and them. This is my community. And so I want it to be a place where good things happen. I don't want it to be a place where, oh, I go out and because the church is so good, we go out and do things for the community. No, my church is full of broken people who live in the community that are broken, and actually we all just want to be better. We want to go out, we want to live in a nicer place. And so we say, don't talk about the community. We talk about our community. This is the place that God has put us. And that doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a really poor community or a really rich community. Sometimes people just don't want to be there. And so how do we work for the peace and prosperity? How do we help everyone to feel like this is a good place to be? So let me share a bit about my community where I am, which is South Reading. Now, South Reading is... I'm very bad with directions. Reading is kind of west of London. You on a fast train, you can make it into the centre of London in about 30 minutes. So it's quite close to London. It's a commuter town. And a lot of the big businesses like Microsoft, a lot of the big IT places have taken their headquarters out of London and put it in Reading. So it's a really prosperous kind of town. It's not a city because it doesn't have a cathedral. That's the that's evidently what makes a city. It is a town, But in this prosperous, growing community is South Reading, so all of the South, which is 20,000 people, which just happens to be one of the poorest communities in the southeast of the UK. So in amongst all of this amazing wealth that just keeps growing and growing and growing are these group of people that haven't at all prospered under the current stuff. Now, these statistics are a little old, but it's still close. So 75% of the Whitley residents, where I work, over the age of 16, have limited or no formal qualifications, which means a lot of the people in our community don't read or write. They didn't finish secondary school. Some of them didn't finish primary school, which means their prospects of employment are quite limited. And so for some of them, some of the kids we work with, we try and get them qualifications in horticulture, something that's a bit more hands-on, so that if they leave school, they're not going to leave school with a school qualification, but maybe they've got something that says, I can turn up to work on time. I am reliable. Maybe I can't write in sentences, but I'm a good worker. And so we have a whole population that have no qualifications in an area where all of these huge IT companies are coming, where their chances of getting employment are fairly limited. These are the people that used to work in the factories or as cleaners in the factories, but now all of these big businesses, yes, they need cleaners and people in catering, but it's a lot less than what used to be there. And so it's quite a difficult thing. And what that means is the parents don't engage with the education of their children because they have no qualifications. They didn't pass school. So they feel intimidated by the school system. And so they don't go to parent-teacher interviews. They don't read at home with their kids. Maybe they can't read. And so there's just this continued cyclical thing of education just isn't important. And it's kind of a generational thing that we have to work with. Whitley has 37, it's almost now 40% now, of children in poverty, who live in poverty. 22.2%, which is now about 24%, of adult working population affected by income deprivation, which means they can't pay for the basic minimum things in the house. And about 27% of older people live in deprivation. Nationally, it's 25% of kids live in poverty across the UK, which means their basic needs aren't being met. Now, it's just not right. This is one of the richest countries in the world. At 8 o'clock, one of the ladies looked up Australia. It's 17% of Australian kids live in poverty, which is also pretty bad. So we have close to 40% of our young people, so up to 18, who don't have their basic needs met at home. So for us, one of the things we do, we work in the local secondary school. We go in free 4 mornings a week. We're basically like the social services for the local secondary school. Us and another Christian organisation volunteer our time there. It's a school of 1,200 kids. It's the ninth worst school nationally for educational results. It's been in the bottom 10 for about 25 years, so that nothing's changed. It's got a reputation of a lot of violence, a lot of anger, and a lot of kids who just don't come to school. There's a lot of truancy. So we're there just to kind of help out however we can, generally with the kids who have meltdowns at school, or the teacher sends them out because they've been disrupted. They come to student services and we just spend some time with them. And the first thing that we notice, we've been there just over, well, about 2 years now, is that most of them are just hungry. Okay, those of you that have had teenagers, have teenagers, no teenagers, know that when they're hungry, they're not happy. Okay, particularly boys. A lot of these kids come to school without any food, without breakfast. So particularly the first two periods of the day, if a teacher sends them in or they come in, we don't ask what's happened or what did you do. We say, are you hungry? That's always our first question. Or have you had breakfast? Some will say yes. Some will say no because there's a stigma attached to not having had breakfast, but we cook toast anyway. And generally by the time it's popped, they're like, oh, that sounds, Miss, could I have some toast? Generally a few other words in there. Oh, sure, yeah. So we offer free toast and free hot chocolate because we know hungry teenagers are not happy teenagers. They're not going to learn. They get angry. They can't focus. And so it's really simple to have some bread and to offer them some food. And they often say to us, oh, where do you get the bread from, miss? And we say, oh, we just bring it. They're like, is it your bread? I'm like, well, it's not my bread, but, you know, I bought it on the way. Well, don't you get, what about school? School give you bread? I'm like, no, school doesn't give us bread. We just, you know, it costs us 50p and some butter. Why? Why do you feed us toast? We're like, well, because we think you might be hungry and we think you might need it. Oh. But no one else feeds us. Why do you bother? Now, it's simple. It's 50p. Now, I'm not going to not feed a group of hungry teenagers for 50p. But it's small things because for them, they don't feel like other people care. They don't feel like no one at home can afford to look after them like that. And so it's really simple to be able to say, well, it's because you matter. Because to us, it's really important that you have breakfast. Because we think you're valuable enough to do that. And so it's small things like that. We can't talk about Jesus in the school, really strict laws, but we can show. It's because you're important. It's toast, but it's so much more than that for them. It's because we think you're valuable and we want to make sure that we can do everything we can to make sure that you can engage in education the best way that you can. So it's in the lowest 5% nationally for education, training and skills. So it means a lot of people haven't been to school. Often that's because they are carers at home for a parent or a grandparent or a cousin or someone who's related via who knows what. And so we have a lot of young carers who often will take their younger siblings to school before they come to school. Now, primary schools start later, so by the time they get to school, they're deemed as having been absent. And that gets marked even though they're there. And if you have too many absences, then the council call your guardian. And if they can't explain a good enough reason as to why you're always late, then they get taken to court. And so we have parents or carers, guardians who are taken to court because the kids are trying to look after their younger siblings to take them to school. And then they come to school, but that's not deemed to be on time. And so it's almost like the whole education system works against them, even though they're trying to do the best they can to care for their families, you know, 15-year-old girls and guys trying to care for their families to make sure their younger siblings get an education, who are then penalised for doing that. So we constantly have these kids who are like, it's just not fair. Yeah, I'm trying my best. It's just not fair. Who get penalised at school because they don't have the right school shoes on. And the reason being because mum doesn't get paid till next week. But the school has a really strict policy on uniform. And so until they get their new shoes, they're excluded from school. And so we're trying to help work with the school. How do we produce a school that works for the kids rather than against them? How do we, rather than just punishment, which is often what our schools do, something happens, the kids get punished because that's the easy way for adults to work. How do we work in a way that actually restores relationships? So we're helping the school with a process called restorative justice, which is about rather than just saying you're wrong and I'm right, actually get students and the teachers together and has a conversation and they try and work out a system that is fair for both. So if a rule has been broken, there's still punishment. We don't say you get away with stuff, But at the same time, the teacher hears and tries to understand why that's happened. Why did you get up in my class and walk out and get a drink? So rather than just pushing you out, oh, you're hungry, you haven't eaten, and so you're trying to, you know, feel like you're full. Okay, I understand that now. But you can't get up and walk out, but can I find a solution to help you next time? So just trying to help teachers to actually hear the stories of why young people are behaving like they do. Why are they always late to school? Why do they get up and walk out of certain lessons? Why don't they like maths? Or finding other ways of teaching them. So one young boy I work with, Kyron, is 14 and like this, is a big boy, comes from a very mixed family, but has a brain for maths like I've never seen. He's in the special class because his behaviour is appalling. But if you sit with him, he does algebra like it's nothing. I don't understand algebra. They have X's and Y's, and I don't get that at all. He doesn't get. He's like, why do you put letters with numbers? Letters are for English. I don't do English. I'm like, I don't know. So we decided, he said, I'm just going to put any numbers where the letters are and do the sums, whatever you do with algebra. I said, fine, you do that. So he put these crazy numbers, like 2 to the power of 27, you know, and all these stupid numbers. And he sat there in his head and did them all. No help at all. I called the teacher over because I'm like, I don't even know what you're doing. And she checked them on her calculator to make sure they were right. And they were all right. Like, he does it all in his head. And so he said to me, I'll do you an easy one. You do it. Because I tell him I'm really bad at maths. He's like, you know, you're just joking. I'm like, no. So he gave me an easy one. I did it all backwards because I just don't understand algebra. And he looked at me and went, you are really stupid, aren't you? I've tried to tell you, you know, it's not just a joke. But how do we help someone like Kyron engage with education? Because he is smart. But because his results are terrible, he's put in a class where kids who can't read, write, can't do anything. But it's just because he can't access the education because of his home life. Because life at home is just so complicated. And so he comes to school and that's his place where he feels free just to blow up. Because at home he can't do that because he has to be the responsible one. So how do we find a place for him where he can blow up and get rid of that steam that a 14-year-old boy needs to, but at the same time help him to access education? So again, we try and intervene for some of these kids and say, he is special, he's got a gift, but we need to find a way to be able to use that. And so we're looking at some of the older church members who we've got a guy who's a nuclear physicist just hanging around our church, as you do. And so we're trying to get him to come in and mentor him as, A, having a father figure, but someone who understands maths, because I'm not that person. And so it's trying to advocate for these kids. Trying to find ways of saying they're not who you think they are. You know, these kids are special. So how are we going to help them? So as a church, we're constantly looking at ways of how can we support families. Family makeup is really complicated. Families aren't mum, dad and kids. Families aren't always mum and dad at all. And so how do we help families be a family unit, whatever that looks like? So we run a families course. And it's not a parenting course. We don't call it a parenting course, but we call it a families course. How, regardless of who you live with, how do you build a community in your house where things of the kingdom come to the fore, where you love each other, where you care for each other, where values are set that are going to be good for everybody and not just good for one person. And we've seen some really amazing transformation of families, of carers of kids realising that actually young people do need some boundaries. But they need boundaries that say, I do this because I want you to be safe, because I love you, rather than if you break this, I'm going to punish you. And so it's helping people to realize the reason we have boundaries in the world is because God's created some boundaries that keep us safe and actually help build relationships. It's not because we don't have boundaries because we break things. We have boundaries because that's what builds us up, keeps us safe. And so changing those ideas for people. I don't know if I have one more or not. I can't remember. Yeah. So the other thing is we have 54% of young people are eligible for free school meals, which means because they're not being, they don't have the finances at home, the UK does give free school meals to any children whose parents live below the poverty line. And so for some of our kids, this is the only meal they'll have all day, is lunch at school, which is great. It's great that the system caters for them. But again, one meal a day isn't enough for teenagers to survive. And so again, working with the school to try and find other ways of other ways we can do work with the local food banks, if you know of families. So trying to use the connections that we have, because often churches run the food banks and those kind of services. How can we connect the churches with the families that you know need that help? Let us do that for you. The school is stretched, and so how can we serve you? That's kind of what can we do to help? The church has some ways that we can support, but we need to know. And so being that conduit between the two has allowed some families to find some extra support that they haven't had before. Which has been, it's been great that we've been able to do that. The one thing that we try and do, particularly with the churches, is we want them to see that everything they do, once they step outside the church, how they live, the choices they make. These are people that live in the community. Okay, they are part of the community. It's not like the people in the church have it all together and life is great. The issues that plague our community plague the people inside the church as well. But how do we help them to make different choices once they're out of church on a Sunday morning so that the choices they make reflect the kingdom of God? They don't have lots of money. They can't do anything big and flash. But we've got a couple of old ladies now who buy a loaf of bread every day and cook toast after school for some of the local kids. Because it's a type of community where it's okay still to go to your neighbour's house because everyone knows each other. There's nothing dodgy in going to the old lady's house next door. But they have realised that some of these kids won't eat after school until like the next day. And so they just have just started buying a loaf of bread and cooking toast after school. And they're like, that's something I can do to show that they're valuable. And, you know, these are the old ladies that say, oh, these young people. But actually inside, if you scratch the surface, they really love them. And they want them to do well. And they want them to know that they're made in God's image. And they want them to know that they're special. And so we constantly say, how can you show God's love? What can you do? And it's not the community we're in. It's not about standing on a street corner and preaching Jesus. Honestly, that would go down like a lead balloon. It's about loving people and saying, you are worthwhile. You are valuable enough for me to give you toast, to babysit your kids while you go to an appointment, to drive you to your appointment because you don't have a car, whatever it is, go and clean up your front yard because you haven't done that for about a year. Whatever it is that people are able to do, what are the things that you can say? And it's not about me receiving a reward. It's about us showing that God's kingdom is a beautiful thing. And when your front yard looks good, actually encourages other people to do the same, which all of a sudden means Our neighbourhood looks really nice now. Again, it's amazing what one little small thing does. We planted the old vicar, Vernon, who retired last year. His one wish before he left was to have some flowers on the roundabout. Spring in the UK is a beautiful thing after a very long, dreary winter. And a lot of richer places have these amazing floral roundabouts that just all spring into action come, you know, whatever month that is that happens. We don't. We had some little bit of grass, some mud, a bit of rubbish, some tyre tracks across the roundabout. And we thought, okay, let's do that. So the local council gave us some money to get 1,000 bulbs. And on the coldest ever day that I've experienced in my life, we planted 1,000 bulbs on a roundabout. There was ice over the dirt. So they brought in a little digger thing and dug it all up for us. We planted them with the school. So a group of students came. This is 2 years ago. And now, every spring, we've got two roundabouts now, daffodils and tulips start to come up. It's beautiful. They're random. There's not, you know, it's not like a nice floral pattern or anything. But for about 2 months, while we have differing flowers over, nobody drives over the roundabout. Now, it's a small thing. You might say, oh, sorry. But for me, that says when we are seeking the peace, when we are allowing nature to do what nature's supposed to do, nature is supposed to bring beauty. Yeah, God created nature not just to be functional, but to be beautiful. So when people start to see that, it says something to them, I shouldn't drive my car over that. It's not like we put a big fence up. There's like a row of daffodils, and all of a sudden that's a no-go zone. So when things are doing what they're supposed to do, when creation does what it's supposed to do, when we are doing what we're supposed to do, that changes a community. Small things and small groups of people. So I'm just going to finish with a video. And we made this video last year. And it's just an encouragement to we are a small organisation that works as one community trying to make small changes, because we think those are the ones that last, the ones that are really grassroots, the ones that people can catch hold of, the ones that aren't grandiose that no one else can do, but the ones that can be repeated again and again and again, that show the kingdom of God and show a community that they are worthwhile.
When we look at the problems of our world, it's easy to feel like they are too big for us, the solutions too hard, the money too short, and the people too few. It's easy to think, what good can come from the small? From the little steps, from the thin hope, from the brave attempt, from the quiet place, from the few friends. From the love in a smile. But it takes more than big words, big money, or big ideas to change our communities, our schools, or our families. It was never the floodlights nor the roar of a crowd. It was never the great heroes that changed this world. In fact, it has always been the small change, the little words, and the tiny persistent actions from small groups of friends who won't let go. That's big enough to shift anything.
And so just as I finish, I just want to say thank you to Deep Creek and to my old friends, my new friends, my people I haven't met yet, for your support over the last 10 years, your financial support. It has enabled me to be a part of helping to change this community, but also others. And it has been a huge blessing to me. And pray that God will continue to provide as he always has, and I trust completely that he will. And I still will be sending prayer letters and support letters, so you'll still be getting those. And I'll still be coming back whenever I'm back in Australia. And this will still always be home. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for your support and your encouragement, and I look forward to that continuing in other ways over the next 10 years as we continue to journey together. So thank you.